It's now time for Sports Saturday.
Are you serious, really?
On 101.3, The Game.
I know football.
Sports Saturday is powered in part by Green City Garage, an environmentally responsible garage in South Burlington, working on all makes and models and specializing in your family's car, truck, or SUV. Vermont Engine Service, an engine and machine shop, 16 Krupp Drive in Williston. Vermont Mortgage Company, mortgage expertise dedicated to Vermonters. See how easy obtaining a mortgage can be. And Romanto's Pizza, delivering to a 10-mile radius of their Taft Corners, Williston location. This is Sports Saturday.
Yet another missed tackle.
Living the dream and taking you with us. 101.3, The Game.
It's Saturday morning on 101.3. It's The Game. 101.3, The Game. You're listening to Sports Saturday. I'm Austin Danforth, the guy you usually hear, Jeff Paul. He's on assignment with the Lake Show, a little preseason soccer jamboree for Colchester High School girls soccer team. So that's where Jeff is. And to my right, the distinct and honorable pleasure joining us this morning, WPTZ News Channel 5's Jack Cordy. Jack, how are you?
I'm a cup of coffee in. I'm feeling good.
Okay.
It's Saturday. Fall sports are back. College football is back tonight.
You blew my mind with that.
It's early.
I totally did not. I was thinking I'm in this process of setting up the draft for my fantasy football league I run, and I'm thinking, okay, September 5th, that's a ways away. College football though, geez.
It's crazy how quickly the football season has come. I feel like we were just ending the spring sports season in high school, and summer flew by, the Lake Monsters flew by, for me at least.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, Miami and the University of Florida tonight.
I was wholeheartedly unprepared for that this morning. Aaron, were you ready for that?
I was not. I forgot that college football was starting again, and I did not realize that such a big matchup was coming right at us for the first day. I'm very pumped. I'm also pumped that football at the professional level is almost back. It's a big time for me right now, you know?
It is a big time for you, I can tell. You're sitting up a little taller already. When you said college football, I was thinking, we probably got some action or you know, something obscure out west. No, it's Miami, Florida.
They've been doing this so much better recently because the first week of college football used to be the most boring week of college football.
Yeah.
You come back and get Alabama versus Louisiana Lafayette, and people would be like, is this football really, you know, 66 to nothing? Now we're getting like big time rivalries week one. I'm here for it. And I'm also here for the NFL season, which is so close. And the college football season kind of snuck up on me as well because I need to do more fantasy football research. So I've been locked into that.
Do you do a lot of research before fantasy season starts?
I tend to be involved in some big leagues with my friends at home, and I need to do well.
Big like a lot of teams or big like a lot of money?
The latter. Yeah. Yeah. It's a league, a very competitive league with my best friend from high school.
Okay.
And it's, you know, the stakes are high and we enjoy it, but that's like a part-time job for me in the fall.
Yeah. Really?
Oh yeah. I mean, you have to, it's a full-time, well, not part-time. It's not full-time, but it's part-time. I have a full-time job already. I mean, you know, it's the research involved and the waiver picks. You got to be on your game at all times, and you don't want to finish in last place because then you're the laughing stock of your friends.
Do you guys have like a bet that comes like like the loser, you know, the caboose of the league has to do something crazy?
We should have that, and I've been trying to institute that as a co-league manager for a while now, but that's something that I want to institute. But no, we play a little bit of high stakes fantasy football and it's a good time, but man, oh man, is it tough to, you know, it's a high stakes league and we have a good time.
Is it like winner take all?
No, there's third place, the first, second, and third,
but okay.
The first place takes 60% of the pot.
Nice.
I think 60 or 70%. So you gotta.
Do you need to protect the innocent and not disclose the buy-in to this league, or can you disclose the stakes? I mean, are we? I didn't mean to grill you. You said you're only on one cup of coffee. I guess I feel like I'm a little bit of a bully this morning.
Yeah, that's a 3 cup of coffee question.
Okay.
So once I get in a little bit more, we'll talk about.
Okay.
That.
Well, we got 2 hours here.
Yep.
We got about 5-6 minutes down here on Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game. If you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 802-655-6672. If texting is more your speed, you can text us at the same number, 802-655-6672. It's the Town Fair Tire text line. We're talking football because I did not know until this morning that football starts tonight. I in my head, I'm thinking NFL. We're talking some fantasy. I'm thinking high school football starts a week from yesterday. So we're 6 days away from high school season. Jack had said earlier, it's literally like summer is actually 2 months. It's not a 3 month season.
No,
when you're in our line of work,
not up here.
It's almost 2 months on the nose from the end of the spring season to the start of preseason for high school sports, and that's the driver. I mean, UVM is a big deal, but high school carries about 10 months worth of man hours.
And this summer felt like we got rain like half the time. It was not a fun summer here.
No, in reality, I mean, when summer is 2 weeks in June, all of July, and 2 weeks in August, and June is basically a washout, that gives you 6 weeks. So you really enjoy, like, July was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
You just savor July, and then you get to August, you're like, oh no, it's August.
We were out at Virtue Field last night. It was cold. I was in multiple layers. Alex Abrami was standing next to me in a t-shirt and shorts, and that dude was chilly up on
top
of the stands. I know.
He's a hardo. And it's funny you mention Virtue Field, UVM soccer, because we're going to be talking to some UVM soccer folks today. Coming up at 10:20, we'll be talking to the victorious UVM women's soccer coach, Christy Lefebvre-Huizenga. when I told her we were hosting today and asked her if she wanted to come on, she's like, oh, yeah, well, you spare me from Jeff. And I was like, us too. but she'll join us in a matter of moments here. And then later in the show, 11:20, we're going to talk to UVM men's soccer coach Rob Dow. We were also at Virtue Field earlier yesterday for UVM soccer media day. Get up to speed a bit on the Catamounts, who are in a precarious position. They have won double-digit games each of Rob Dow's first two seasons, been arguably the best or second best team in their conference, and have nothing to show for it beyond a couple of very painful playoff exits.
The word underperformed was thrown around yesterday, talking about the last couple of years. I mean, and we'll obviously get into it more, but a couple of years ago, making it into the big dance, winning a tournament game at home against Rider, and then pushing Virginia to the limits. Mm-hmm. And since then, not a whole lot of stuff, not a whole lot of what we're used to from UVM. So I just like the attitude heading into this year for the men's soccer team over at UVM. So it'll be interesting to see what Rob has to say about that. And I'm looking forward to talking to him.
Yeah. Aaron, you're holding a piece of paper in your hands. I'm sensing it's time to talk about our poll question for the day.
Yeah, we got the Green City Garage poll question brought to you by Green City Garage in South Burlington, 49B Commerce Ave, Unit 5, South Burlington. Or you can find them at greencitygaragevt@gmail.com or www.greencitygarage.com. This week's Green City Garage poll question.
Hit me with it.
Should the Red Sox attempt a full rebuild, yes or no?
Ooh.
Came up this week on the huddle.
That seems awful fire and brimstone.
It does.
For 1 year removed from a championship.
It does, but Red Sox fans, it can be a little doom and gloom.
Well, Jack, you're in here a couple weeks ago with Jeff.
Yeah.
When I was out on assignment, I believe had something to do with golf.
assignment. Personal assignment.
Personal assignment, work-life balance assignment. Did he get into it all with you as a Tigers guy? I see the big D on your shirt.
Last in the league.
Yeah. Did he get into the Dave Dombrowski thing with you?
I don't believe we dove into that head first.
Okay.
What were we talking about? That was a few weeks ago. I can barely remember Wednesday.
That's okay. It's okay. It's okay.
Life moves fast.
It does. Basically, if we're talking Red Sox, I mean, so Dave Dombrowski got the Red Sox a championship.
Yep.
And Jeff likes to go back on, the Dave Dombrowski method is basically, sell off assets, buy now, win big, and then all of a sudden you got nothing to show for it after the fact. I mean, as a Tigers fan, what did you see? Like, because they had that mid-aughts run. Famously to me, rode an elevator in St. Louis with Jim Leland during the 06 World Series, but they didn't win that.
They had an incredible window, and that's what you hired Dombrowski to do, is win in that window. And in order to win, he depletes the farm system, and that's just what he does. He trades farm prospects for MLB assets, and the Tigers should have won a World Series, man. Like, it, 2013 against the Red Sox, David Ortiz doesn't hit that grand slam off Joaquin Benoit in the eighth inning at Fenway. Tigers go up 2-0, heading back home with Verlander on the bump. And that's, and then they play the Cardinals in the World Series.
Yeah.
Instead, Boston wins that game. They go on to win the World Series that year. And that was kind of the last real chance the Tigers had.
So then that's kind of the question that this poll question hinges on, is do you think that window is closing for the Red Sox and that they have to fix the fact that Dombrowski ravaged their prospects, or do you think that window is still open and this was just an off year?
Well, I feel like I said it a week or two ago when we were talking about the Sox and their, you know, I was going to come up with some fecal-related analogy here, but the season they've had, being the second year of this, you know, we won last year, we're not good this year. Which one is, like, truer to life? Because you won't know until you get that sort of third season where you can balance it all out. Like, was last year the aberration where everything clicked and everybody looked like world beaters and they had it all put together? Or is this year, the aberration where they actually are world beaters and this is just an off year? I don't know.
They haven't been awful. I mean, they're 69 and 61 right now. Yes, it looks bad because the Yankees are 84 and 46.
Right.
So they're 15 games back in the division. But still, they have a lot of good pieces on that team still. They really do. I know Chris Sale has been, he's been injured. He's had a tough time. A lot of good pieces in that lineup. Pitching hasn't been what it needs to be. You can get a pitcher or two. I don't know if you got to blow the whole thing up right now.
Well, the thing with pitchers, like, how many are out there? Like, I mean, it's a very fixed commodity. Like, there's only so many good pitchers, and only so many are available to, you know, trade, sign, you know, draft, all that. It's tricky.
Yeah, well, you can't do a whole lot about pitching this year because of the contracts, but those contracts are also causing this cliff of Mookie Betts and JD having limited time as Red Sox to approach faster, because you don't have the money to pay both those guys. And if JD walks, you probably still don't have the money to pay Mookie. So you might see both those guys leave this year. And if that happens, then, you know, you kind of have to restart to an extent, because you don't know if Rafael Devers and Xander Bogaerts are actually the guys that they've been this year.
Well, and it's funny that you use the phrasing, like, have the money to pay. Like, this is the MLB. There is no salary cap. You could spend infinity dollars if you wanted to collect the players you want. Like, you could. It's the same as European soccer. Like, just you want a guy? How deep do you want to tap that vein? How open do you want to make your wallet? I struggle to think that the Red Sox are gonna, you know, be in the poverty line, you know, because they sign JD and Mookie. Like, okay, so they, every t-shirt becomes $2 more, every hat becomes a dollar more. They raise ticket prices again. What have we seen forever? That's just how it, like, okay, Fenway Franks are going to be, but I don't even know what a Fenway Frank is now. I didn't get one the last time I went there. Is it like $8? So now becomes a $9 hot dog. I don't know, but
they already have the highest payroll in baseball. Is that worth it?
If they want to win, what's that worth to you? I mean, ultimately you would need to let go of Sale or whomever is underperforming, because at the end of the day, you can look at someone's WAR or their numbers and, like, dollars per statistic. Like, is this guy performing? Yes or no? And then you make your decision based on that. You can get really cold about it, but also if you want to pay for something, you, like, the Red Sox have the money. Like, they're not short on ticket sales or any merchandise sale. Like, they can do it, and they, like, having won as much as they have in the last 15 years, it's not going to, like, people aren't going to stop coming anytime soon.
The more we talk about this, the more it reminds me of the 2016 Tigers under Dave Dombrowski, where the team continued to try to add pieces despite the window closing. And it almost seems like the Red Sox cashed in, but the window is closing kind of rapidly. So they really could continue to try to add pieces right now and get back to that championship stature that they were at last year. But it may be a more heady play to just say, hey, I don't think we're going to be able to get back to the championship status that we were at last year and not become the current Detroit Tigers, who are 39-87, you know, the last team in Major League Baseball.
I didn't mean to laugh at you. I'm laughing near you.
Vying for the number one pick for the second time in three seasons. That's how much Dombrowski depletes the farm system. And they've barely just gotten it back up to being respectable in baseball. So if the Red Sox want to continue to try to get back to championship status, that's all good and well. But they might not get there. And if they don't, they could look like the current Detroit Tigers just because we've seen this with Dombrowski before. This is what he does.
Well, I think, and I don't know what Dombrowski's on the hook for with the Red Sox, but I mean, he's your guy. He's your win now guy. If you do want to rebuild, like, and as you can go to the 101.3 The Game Twitter feed to weigh in with your thoughts, or the give us a shout with your thoughts later in the show. If you're going to rebuild, you don't rebuild with Dombrowski. That's not his milieu.
Is that English?
Not his MO. No, it's a French word. But that's not what he does. You find somebody that builds a system back up, and you go from there. I don't think they've overhauled the scouting. I mean, I think they can still get guys. It just takes time for the guys you get in the draft to become stars.
I also think it looks worse because the Yankees are doing so well, and you're always going to compare the Yankees and Red Sox. Red Sox fans feel worse about their team because they see the Yankees doing incredibly, and that makes it worse.
And the Yankees is, it compounds the issue, but if the Sox were seven games better, you know, okay, then they're in the driver's seat for the wild card or whatever that number is right now. If they were comfortably in the wild card chase or lead or contention, then it's actually all sins forgiven. Just get to the playoffs and make stuff happen. If you get to the playoffs, okay, cool, good job. But if you don't, we spent all this money for what? It's not even the Yankees as much as it's like just being in the playoffs. Like if they can't make the playoffs, spending do you know what the number is off the top of your head, Aaron?
For the Red Sox?
Yeah.
No.
Okay. Well, don't worry about it.
I respect the honesty. Just no. Okay.
I love that. I just, if you got it, good. If you don't, it's okay. We'll move on. It's the playoffs is the thing. And it's like what we're going to talk to the UVM soccer coaches later in the show. I mean, Rob Dow, men's soccer, it's this sort of the same with men's basketball. It honestly, once you get to that level of sports, if you're not getting to the end game, mm-hmm. It doesn't feel like you accomplished what you want, unless of course you got context and like could be a rebuilding year, and you know, six wins is a great thing for a soccer team at that point. But if your goal is the NCAA tournament and you don't get there, you're not going to feel good about what's going on. So I don't know. Anyway, we're looking a few minutes away from talking to Christy Lefebvre of the 1-0 UVM Catamounts. Great, great story. We'll get into it with Christy after the break. But a local kid done good last night at Virtue Field. It was fun to watch.
It was fun, man.
It was. We'll get into it.
Okay.
We'll be back.
Sports Saturday is back on 101.3 The Game.
Oh, we're back on Sports Saturday. I'm looking over at Jack. Is that still a one coffee smile?
It's a one coffee smile still, but inside it feels like two.
Okay, because I'm inching towards cup three from my French press. I'm a three cup guy in the morning. That's how I do. Aaron is a five cup guy?
Five to six. Six on a bad day.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
So what's a really bad day?
I think the worst, I've done like eight cups on a day where like I think the SATs or like maybe one of my college days, I had.
I'm going to lean back in the chair and switch the mic, and we're going to have a little chat right now. How long has this been? How long have you been slurping this much caffeine?
This much? Probably since sophomore year of high school.
Wow.
How do you take your coffee?
Just cream. Used to be cream and sugar.
Hey, me too.
Trying to cut back on the sugar, you know? So
I only New Year's Eve resolution I've ever kept, like, significantly, cutting sugar out of my coffee cold turkey.
Wow.
We're talking a dozen years now.
I still get gasps when I say I just drink my coffee straight black. People are like, what? I'm like, oh, yeah, this is, I'm one fine. Of a million people that do this.
Yeah, it's not that weird.
Okay, I still get that though. They're like, oh, really, black, huh?
I drink it black sometimes. I don't enjoy it as much. So if I'm going for like an 8-cup day, I try and make it enjoyable.
It's in a set, like, I resort to, you know, straight black coffee, like, if there is no cream or no milk, or we're looking at just soy milk or some weird almond milk thing that, like, just doesn't literally cut it. enough to make it worth it.
I try to make my coffee as quote unquote healthy as possible, and I'm just like, oh, it's just coffee water, it's bean water, and I try not to add anything to it, but at the same time I'm just staining my teeth black, so that's really great. It's really good for a guy on TV.
Do you that's a whole thing. I'm not going to open the lid on that can. But what we can get into this segment is talking some UVM women's soccer. Last night at Virtue Field, Catamounts come out 1-0 winners over Sacred Heart.
Second straight year, 1-0 winners.
Yeah, well, I think that's 5 in a row against Sacred Heart as a program. And the story we were hinting at was local products, former CVU star Natalie Durio was the game winner. And folks that knew Natalie during her high school years would know her as a midfielder and defender and an exceptional one at the high school level. She's transitioned to striker, and the coach who helped bring about that move is on the line, UVM women's soccer coach Christy Lefebvre-Huizinga. Christy, how does it feel to be 1-0 this morning?
Hey, guys. Well, first, thanks for having me. And yeah, it feels great. It's always good to get that, you know, that opening win, especially, you know, first home game. It's move-in day at UVM. So, yeah, definitely lots of excitement.
And I think Jack asked the question last night. I mean, last year, and we talked about it during the interview earlier this week, but last year was sort of a tale of two seasons, sort of a slow start with 11 freshmen in the mix and trying to get everybody on the same page. Didn't notch that first win until the sixth game. And this year, 1-0 going down to Army. I think you guys leave today. In your experience as the head coach now in your 9th season, just starting on the right foot like that, what does that do to set the tone for the rest of the year?
Yeah, well, it definitely builds confidence right away. It kind of gets that monkey off your back, that first win, and especially a shutout. It's good for our, you know, defensive unit and our goalkeepers, who split yesterday, and, for both of them to combine for that is really good. And, you know, like last year, again, you guys hit the nail on the head with 11 freshmen, not that it's anyone's fault or anything, but it definitely takes some time to work them into the mix and for them to adjust to the physicality and speed of play and just everything all at once for them at this level. And so, you know, though we have a lot of underclassmen now, you know, they still have a lot of experience, those 11 freshmen. So definitely going forward with some challenging games coming up, it's definitely good to get off on the right foot.
Hey, Coach. Good to talk to you this morning. What was the thing that you liked the most from your performance last night? Was it the defensive effort, despite, you know, the team could have backed away once that first post was hit and then the second post was hit, and you kind of come away feeling a little lucky about the win? Or how do you feel after you see, you know, the fact that that could have very well been a 2-1 game? Instead, it's a 1-0 win in your guys' favor.
Right. Yeah. No. That's a good point. And we, you know, something we talked about in the pregame. So, you know, to answer your original question, you know, what are we most proud of? I think one of our main goals before the game was to obviously to win the game, but to find moments in the game for our experience to really show through. We knew that was a team that had, I believe they had 21 freshmen on the roster. So they were kind of in a similar boat to, you know, where we were last year with a lot of youth. And one of the things we wanted to do was just identify moments in the game where there's momentum shifts or little things where we either need to, you know, put our foot down and press a little harder or let off a little bit and try to keep the ball and just sort of slow the game down a little bit. And then also find moments where we really need to work to close out the game and make smart choices or close out a half or whatever circumstance we're in. And I thought that we found those moments and capitalized on them.
The we in that statement you just made, is that you and your coaching staff, or you and your coaching staff and the players, or the players to identify those moments?
I mean, it's definitely a blend of both. You know, we as a staff, we try to help them through as much as we can just by communicating, but soccer is it's a unique game. We don't have timeouts or unlimited subs to come in and out. So a lot of it's really done, you know, over the course of the game and then across the field, and it's loud and there's a lot going on and the message doesn't always get there. So we do a lot of work throughout training and throughout the year to try to build the confidence in our players to make choices for themselves and not just constantly rely on everything that we're telling them. And a lot of times by the time we see it, relay the message, it gets to them and then they put it into action, it's too late. The moments have just happened so quickly. So we really, you know, try to empower them to make those decisions on their own and, take risks. And, you know, they were able to do that yesterday, which was really nice to see.
So I stand at the top of the stands with a camera and I shoot down on you guys, and the past couple years, it's been even more loud in the stands due to the support from the CVU faithful because of Natalie Durio. And she gets a flick on the ball on a near post run last night and puts it in the back of the net. And what a story. What a scene when she scores her first collegiate goal. What did you think about her move forward and the result from that last night?
Yeah, I mean, well, we couldn't be prouder of Natalie. She's, you know, most importantly, she's a phenomenal kid. She's a great part of our program, a great teammate, which is always something that's of huge value to us. And as far as soccer, she's, you know, has nothing but a huge upside. She's grown tremendously over the course of the last year. We knew that athletic ability was something that she, you know, obviously brings to the table, and that for her it was going to be a little bit of getting caught up to just sort of tactics at this level, improving her technical ability, sort of touch on the ball and things like that. And she's done all those things, and she's kind of developed into a threat for us up front. She always comes in fit for preseason, one of the fittest players on the team, so that always helps her. But specifically on the goal, I mean, we've been talking a lot with our forwards about making slashing runs in front of defenders, and a lot of times it can be easy for players to just sort of hide behind the defenders, and she made a great run in front, exactly what she was supposed to, and executed a great finish.
The move for Natalie, I mean, watching you guys last year, she played some sort of outside backs, a little in midfield, and sort of sparingly at times. I think you had her sort of up top, like maybe like later in the half to spell the starters a little bit and throw some athleticism at opponents' back lines. But usually, traditionally, like as players progress up in levels in soccer, if anything, they move backward on the field for the most part. But you have taken a player who most of her high school career was, you know, in the defensive half until she was a senior, and you've put her up in front of goal. What did you see that made you think this would be, you know, maybe a winning sort of experiment for you guys?
Yeah, well, we, you know, so right away when she came in, and that's a really good point, you're right, a lot of players do end up moving backwards as they increase in their level from high school to college or club to college or whatever it may be. With Natalie, she was definitely, I think it might be a little bit of a blend of things we've seen in her and a little bit of just kind of trial and error and a little bit of nerves on her part last year. I think we, you know, we had tried her like in the back, and I can definitely see how that would be very nerve-wracking for, you know, your collegiate debut to be like, you know, in a defensive role where you're pretty much the last line besides the goalkeeper, and if you get beat, it's pretty magnified. So she's a little bit nervous, understandably so. last year. So we started moving her higher up a little bit, just so to take the pressure off a little bit as far as like defensive mistakes go. And she started to do really well. And then obviously like her athleticism is a huge attribute. She strikes the ball incredibly well. I think, you know, we probably saw her take a couple of corner kicks last night, a couple free kicks. The girl can strike the ball. So we decided to start using that as an asset out wide. So putting her as a winger, outside mid. And then we just kept moving her forward. She scores goals in training all the time and kind of wreaks havoc with our defenders. So yeah, I hope that answers your question, but she's been really shining up there.
I kind of want to switch the topic just a little bit to the Women's World Cup from this summer. I got really into that, and a lot of the country did. What has that done, in your opinion, to energize the sport of women's soccer that you've seen so far?
Yeah, the World Cup was awesome, and it's something we, you know, encourage all of our players to watch and take note of. And and for any of the young girls that are watching, we always talk to our team about watching it in two different ways, like allowing yourself to watch it as a fan and just enjoying it and enjoying it as sport, and then also you know, picking a few games to really watch it as a student of the game and watch players in your position, watch how they carry themselves, watch how their movement off the ball, watch how they interact with their teammates, watch how they lead, those sorts of things. And I definitely think this World Cup was a great one for both of those things, both for entertainment value and then also for learning.
Oh, so you actually talk to the team about the World Cup. You have a conversation with them about watching it. I think that that's unique and cool.
Yeah, we do, you know, ahead of time. We just, you know, we obviously remind them of when the games are and some good key games that are upcoming that they definitely want to key in on or record or take notes during. We'll talk to specific players about, like, hey, there's a special player on this team and your position. We want you to watch how she defends or watch how she, you know, attacks players 1v1, just lots of different little things. And kind of have them watch that game, no, not necessarily just as a fan, but with a critical eye to sort of pick up things that they wouldn't ordinarily see just by watching our own game film.
And before we get out here, Christy, we're coming up against a break. I'm curious, like, are there coaches or teams that you find yourself drawn to as a student, you know, trying to, or you know, whether it's emulate or, you know, pick up ideas from how they, you know, set up their teams at whether it's the, you know, elsewhere in college soccer or, you know, professional soccer at home or abroad?
Yeah, we definitely, we talk to them about that all the time. More about specific players, I think, than specific teams. We love to make comparisons and we love to talk to our players about, like, who or how they identify as a player, and just talking to them about, like, how it, lots of, we don't want a bunch of robots on our team where all the players do the same thing. We want a blend of different things. So if you watch, you know, Alex Morgan, for instance, she's one type of forward. Kristen Press is another type of forward. Megan Rapinoe is another type of, you know, midfielder forward. And Lindsay Horan now, like, and I think it really helps them identify, and those are just some U.S. national team players as examples, but I think it really can help, like, you know, not every athlete and body is created the same. And so, like, you know, if you have a player who's not necessarily as fast, watching someone like Lindsay Horan, who's not that fast, who's a starter and a great player for us, can really help you, because I think that can, you know, create some mental struggles sometimes when you look at those around you and you see, you know, these, like, you know, lean, tall, fast athletes, and then that's not you. Well, there's still a spot for you in the field, and there's still a place for you in this game to excel. You just have to develop a different skill set. So that's just one example of some of the things that we talk about with our athletes. And then just for anyone listening or younger fans, everyone's going to be different, and it's just about finding, you know, how you can maximize that given your skill set and athleticism and talents.
Well, that's awesome. I love to hear that, you know, just creatively thinking about the game. And I know you guys are about to hit the road, I think, later today to go down to West Point to take on Army tomorrow afternoon. So I think from Jack and I, we wish you good fortune in the wars to come, and good luck tomorrow afternoon against the Knights.
Thank you so much, guys. Austin and Jack, it's great talking with you, and have a good rest of your weekend, guys.
You too.
Thank you.
Christy Lefebvre-Huizenga from UVM Catamounts. And yeah, soccer is such a tough, tough road. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk more about it, I think, with Rob Dow next hour. But I mean, the margins are just so small. I mean, people think hockey, the margins are small, but soccer, it's even tougher to score. So every goal means even more. And every mistake, I mean, you could play 89 minutes of a game perfectly, but have a 10-second lapse. And all of a sudden, if you didn't score, you're not winning.
Case in point, last night, two pings off the post for Sacred Heart, big old goose egg in the goal column.
Those poor Pioneers. So we'll be back after this with more Sports Saturday.
Another day of sports talk in the Champlain Valley. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
We're back on Sports Saturday, 101.3 The Game. Just had an awesome chat with UVM women's soccer coach Christy Huizenga. And we're talking off air. I'm curious, and like we can mix this up, you know, Jack the person, Jack the sportscaster. But what sports do you enjoy the most?
Ooh, that's a good question. As a person, I've always been a baseball guy. I would be the guy that sits down and watches 150 of the 162 games. But that's also because I enjoy success and my team was winning back then. So I would spend the 3 hours each summer day, in high school and college to really tune in and watch every at bat. But I've become more and more a fan of college hoops over the years. I love myself some college hoops. And it's fun to cover great college hoops around here.
Which we do get.
Exactly. So I guess that's kind of a multi-part question, but the person, if you're going to combine the person in me, because I'm allowed to be human. And
I don't know if I went there, but you can go there if you want to.
And the sportscaster in me, college hoops is right up there with me now. It probably has surpassed baseball as my favorite sport to watch, specifically mm-hmm. that type of game. I like the NBA. I know you're not a huge NBA guy.
I'm a minuscule NBA guy at best.
And the players drive that league as opposed to the teams, so that's different. But for me, I love the integrity of college hoops. I love the underdog in college hoops. Mm-hmm. And I love the grind of a good mid-major in March, making a run, or the tournaments. In March, the conference tournaments. I love the moments that college basketball brings.
Yeah, it's set up so well for that climactic last month where you have, I mean, how many teams are there in Division I now? It's like 365 or something like that. You know, so you got 360 plus team storylines. Each of those has, you know, 15 kids on the team that have their own storylines and, you know, a bench, a coaching staff with their own storylines, and as they all bubble up towards the tournament, you get it's such a effective spotlight vehicle for all these things, and it's a really good blend of excitement and like the action with the human stuff too.
It's just fun to be so close around these parts to a great program with great players and a great coach.
Yeah,
we're fortunate enough. I'm not even talking as a sportscaster. I'm talking as a human to be in this tight-knit community where the basketball team here at UVM is so open and welcoming to the community and wants that, you know, needs that community support. So that's why they feed off of that. And I think that's unique in college hoops, in college sports in general, but especially college hoops in this intimate Patrick Gym setting that we have now for not very much longer. Yeah. Which, by the way, walking by the athletics campus to Virtue Field, they're tearing out the parking lot now. We're starting to see things, and that's fun.
They're digging. We're talking sort of like, you know, peeling the curtain back on what, you know, as sports journalists gets us going here on Sports Saturday. If you want to chime in with maybe your favorite sports or, you know, the things you love to watch or take in, you can call us at 802-655-6672. Maybe you think we're wrong. Maybe we're coming at it the wrong way. And if you feel that way, you can call, you can text that same number. I've grown up, I didn't play soccer growing up. I mean, I played it like little kids play soccer, and then tried my hand at football because I really liked football. And as a person, football wasn't for me. Didn't love getting hit. Maybe that makes me soft, but I didn't love that. And so I never got soccer until I was in college. And that was it just sort of opened up it unfurled itself for me. And I understood it, and it was sort of the one sport at the time, you know, mid-2000s, that ESPN and the other outlets weren't bashing over our heads, you know, like where it was UNC Duke and Red Sox Yankees three times every sports center. You know, it wasn't that. It wasn't, you know, the relentless cycle of NFL news. It was just sort of like you could access it as much or as little as you want. And I like just sort of latched onto it, and it's been really rewarding to because you can appreciate it at all these levels because it's, and I think that's really important for what we do. You know, you can compartmentalize. Like Division IV Vermont High School sports is not Division I.
Well, he doesn't want to play it either as much. And that's something that we've seen in youth sports. And I think that as football takes a downfall in youth sports, soccer, something needs to fill the gap there.
Yeah.
And soccer's always been a youth sport. Everyone plays soccer growing up. But I think that, you know, over time, if that starts to overtake playing football as a youth sport, we could see the interest as adults, which would be a welcome addition to the United States. Maybe our men's team actually becomes good. Our, you know, national men's team actually becomes good. Fingers crossed. I mean, I'm enjoying watching Christian Pulisic overseas.
He's incredible.
An American representative playing for Chelsea. But it would be interesting to see the growth of soccer as, you know, juxtaposed with the potential downfall of football. Just because, I mean, if I had to say it right now, I don't think I would let my child play football. Or give him a choice, but, you know, be like, do you really want to do this?
Right. Yeah, I'm right there with you.
I'm not trying to get into the they play football or not argument.
No, it's totally fair. It's funny you say like people gravitating slowly away from football. And in my fantasy league, I mentioned running earlier in the show. We were 12 teams. We're down to 10. And part of that's like I wasn't pressing people to stay in the league, but it's been 5-6 years, and it's a bunch of University of Vermont friends and hangers on, but a lot of my friends who were into football and were into fantasy have just sort of been like, no. And I've had a couple that have been like, I can't really get behind like supporting, you know, the football industrial complex. It's weird. I have two friends. I got to replace a team. So I think I've found a replacement team, but it's seeing the way that even, you know, people of our age have gravitated away from that. And maybe are more casual fans of other things, whether it's the NBA or soccer. I know it's a pretty eclectic group of UVM friends I have. So a lot of people are soccer people or not really sports people, or they, you know, a wide range of interests. But football isn't one of them like it used to be.
It's never going to dissipate entirely. The money for the NFL, the revenue is too high.
And it's too popular in too many parts of the country.
Yeah, and people are still going to play it, no doubt. But a slight decrease is a big deal. So we'll see.
Yeah. Anyway, we're coming up on the end of hour one here on Sports Saturday. When we come back after this, it's going to be out in left field. So buckle up.
Get ready, because you're about to hear some weird shit. This is Out in Left Field on 101.3 The Game.
Here comes the spooky music. Jack, are you ready for Out in Left Field?
No, I kind of have goosebumps.
You look, your shoulders cowered a little bit. You sort of shrank behind the mic.
I'm shaking up.
Aaron, what do you got?
I got an exciting one this week because this one's close to home. A fish with two mouths was found in Lake Champlain.
Oh, yes, I did see this. Spooky. Like, weird looking fish.
I saw the picture. It made me feel a little sick. A woman in upstate New York recently reeled in what she thought was just a big catch on Lake Champlain, only to discover it was more unique than that. The fish, identified as a lake trout, had two mouths. So basically, like the way it looks, it's like an over-under shotgun with two barrels. It's got a mouth and then a mouth underneath sticking out. It's really gross. It's two mouths, and the one on top's lower jaw is the one on bottom's upper jaw.
Right.
So it's really like a mouth with two holes. It's super uncomfortable looking.
It's almost creepy. It was supposed to have two jaws and the bottom jaw is missing, because it was like, it really is just like a hole.
Yeah.
Ugh. I need two mouths to eat more. So I imagine how much you could eat with two mouths. That'd be incredible.
I don't want to know.
Or how much coffee you could drink, Aaron.
Oh man, I could probably 16 cups then. Wow.
I heard
that is an unhealthy amount.
Yeah, you need to relax with that. I heard that this fish was caught again yesterday.
What?
That was through the grapevine at work yesterday. That this really? Fish was caught again. And people,
well, it's got two places to get caught. So there is that.
People were like, stop catching this fish. And it's like, no one's going out there like, all right, got to catch this two-mouthed fish.
It doesn't have a tracker on it.
It's like Jaws. They're just going out hunting for the two-mouthed fish.
Yeah.
What are you supposed to do? Plural, yeah.
Wow, actually. That's what I heard, but I'm looking at a picture of this thing right now. If you haven't looked it up, by the way, this is making national headlines.
Yeah, I think you guys had it at PTZ. We had it at the Free Press. What was the rest of the story here?
Okay, so basically she took some snaps of it that went viral, and then she released it back into the water, and like Jack said, it may have been caught again. I'm not sure. They don't say that in this story. People have theorized that it was injured when it was younger. Based on the look of it, I don't think so. Biologists think it could have been a genetic birth defect. Yeah. Some people are speculating that this fish is related to Champ.
That's
true, is what you're going to say.
Well, also, that story is from the Bangor Daily News. Like, what is Bangor doing talking Champ. Lake Champlain fish? I don't know.
How do you connect a long-necked lake monster to a fish with two mouths? Like, even if you believe that both those things were things that could, like, be consistently real, like, this is obviously an anomaly.
Yeah.
Like, they're not going to be related.
Yeah, I mean, you could say a more likely situation is, like, leftover radiation from something like that just, you know, tweaked the genetics of this fish's parents, and whoop, here you go, it has two mouths.
It's like a bird, it's a plane, it's two mouth man.
Could you imagine? Like, it's freaky if you're swimming in the lake and like something brushes up against you. Like, that's weird.
Mm-hmm.
Could you imagine looking down or like being in the boat and like a fish jumps to like do something and you see this fish with a mouth and then a hole beneath its mouth?
Nah, I'm good with that. Like, I'm out of that lake. You can catch me on dry land ASAP if that happens to me.
You're more of a pool guy at that point?
Yeah, I immediately migrate to the pool. Have we named this fish yet? Has anyone thought of a name?
Mouthy.
Is that what it is?
I don't know.
They also call me that sometimes, so I've laid my claim to that. That's, no, I'm out of there if I see this thing. It is a weird-looking thing.
I looked at it, and then one of the posts had like a second, like a profile, and the head on, it didn't look as weird. The profile from the side was where I was like, ew.
Yeah.
Ew.
Prehistoric looking thing.
I hope the fish doesn't feel any pain from it.
They said that the fish appeared to be healthy.
It looked like a big size fish. So like it had gone
two mouths.
Years with, you know, a mouth and a hole.
Yeah.
It's
a full size lake trout. Big old boy.
Hmm.
There's a lot of those in Lake Champlain.
There are. And bigger.
And a monster.
Yeah. Okay. That does it for Out in Left Field. We'll be back.
Now, back to Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
Ooh. Fiery beats from Aaron Wells on the board. Love them as always. It's hour two of Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game. Sitting here with Austin Danforth and Jack Cordy. Jeff Paul is on assignment with the Lake Show, taking the Colchester High School Lakers to a jamboree.
Where are they?
I believe it's in central New Hampshire.
Ooh.
A little jamboree action down there, the other side of the Connecticut River. Getting Colchester tuned up for the new season, which starts end of the week.
End of Friday. Friday. Not the end of Friday.
Less than 7 days away.
Yeah.
I will be ready by Friday. We're working towards it. Machinations are underway. Previews stuff and all that, including some power rankings. Jack Cordy, for high school football. My boy Alex Abrami posted these the other day. I'm losing track of the days, but I know it was recently. Did you get a chance to check these out?
I have not yet, but I saw number one and I chatted with him.
Okay.
So that's about as far as I got.
So folks that may have missed this, you can go to BurlingtonFreePress.com. Preseason rankings are out. We'll have more on the way for high school soccer, field hockey as well. Players to watch for all these sports, among other things. But high school football, Alex Abrami's preseason pick for number one, Los Tigres.
Yeah.
From Middlebury.
Your Middlebury Tigers.
I know.
There's no biases here. I'm just referring to when you picked them a couple years ago.
They've been very, very lucrative for me in the Free Press Fearless Football Forecast, which you won last year.
Yeah, I didn't want to bring it up, but
it was the elephant in the room. It was getting a little cramped in the corner here. So Jack Cordy was the picks king last fall for high school and college football in Vermont. Did so in a thrilling fashion in the Division I championship game.
It feels good, man.
What a rush.
I'm still kind of riding the high from that, which says a lot about my life, but it was a fun thing to bring that home last year. I took down the venerable, honorable George Como.
Yeah.
And the final waning moments of that MMU-Rutland title game.
In a points tiebreaker.
And, you know, it means a lot to... You know, we do these picks every week.
Are you tearing up?
I think I do. You guys have a tissue?
It's a little
for me?
Misty in here.
I'm getting a little emotional. No, it's fun to pick these games every week with you guys and, you know, kind of surf our way through the season together and watch the standings every week and get to know these teams better than I would if I wasn't doing the picks.
Yeah.
You know, it's fun to watch as a fan of the game of high school football and just to, you know, pick who I think is going to win. But the thing is with high school football here in Vermont and everywhere pretty much is the first 3 weeks are always such a crapshoot.
Yeah.
You really don't know. Like Abrami picks Middlebury, you know, number one in the preseason. We really don't know how this thing is going to shake out.
It's easy to pick the good teams.
Yes.
Like, but then sometimes even then, you know, they have a hiccup and you get surprised. You and I are two of 10 in the Free Press Football Forecast. It's been running for decades now, started back in the days of, Ted Ryan and others in the Free Press Sports Department. It's you, myself, Alex Abrami, Michael Benioch, the Caledonian Record, Adam Samrov with the Bennington Banner, Lauren Walsh from,
2244.
I have a hard time not calling it Channel 66, but, and then, Channel 3's, Jack Fitzsimmons. I mean, we're going all over the state.
Yep.
We have people, chiming in with their thoughts. And yeah, it's easy to say based on last year and what we've heard from coaches that it looks like Middlebury's the early favorite.
Yeah.
This year they bring back 18 upperclassmen, including 10 seniors, the entire backfield, two of whom are like quarterback. We got Tim Gettleman, the quarterback, running back Tyler Buxton, who was incredibly explosive in all three phases last year. CJ Bryant was a sort of a explosive fullback, which you don't hear those two words put together very often. And I think most football people in the state will tell you the coaching staff at Middlebury, Dennis Smith and his guys there, Jed Malcolm, John Newseeder, those guys, they know how to teach football. They get a lot every year out of their kids. And when they had that great run of three consecutive championship game appearances in the middle of the decade, they had incredible material to work with, and it showed in the results. After Middlebury, Alex Abrami has St. Johnsbury number two, Rutland number three, Rutland's last year's runner-up.
Yep.
They're replacing their backfield, Dakota Peters and Ryan Moore, who were sort of that 1-2 punch in that read option they run down there. But they have one of the few things most teams don't, which is a great line coming back. That's sort of the question mark for Middlebury. How do they fill in the trenches? Number four, Burren Burton, new coach, new division. They got bumped up to Division I finally, some might say, after being sort of the top dog with in the better part of the last 6-7 years in D2. Yeah. They were the top dog that underachieved a lot of the time, came away with a couple championships, but
Bellows Falls snuck one in there.
Bellows Falls got in there. Fairhaven got in there. But Burn Burton now in Division One. Alex likes them at number four to start the year. Then we get deeper into the top 10. Bellows Falls, BFA, Hartford, Essex, Fairhaven, and Brattleboro. Brattleboro is now a Division II team.
So they slide down.
They do. And then Alex Abramia's Champlain Valley, Aaron Wells Red Hawks as a team to watch. So having rattled off that stuff, what's striking you about, you know, maybe the early power brokers this year in high school football?
I think my game to watch in the first week is BBA taking on the Seawolves.
Ooh, yeah.
Burn Burton taking on the Seawolves. I stopped by Seawolves practice earlier this week. They surprised a lot of people last season. It's a co-op between Burlington High School and South Burlington High School. And they played extremely well, pulling off a last second, late minute upset of Rutland in the final week of the season.
To make the playoffs.
That was epic in their first year.
It was a great moment, great game to send them into the playoffs.
And they have a lot of talent on that team, and they have more and better numbers than they did last year. I think coming in just short of 50 is what I heard. So it's going to be, that's my game of the week in week one. If you want to spotlight one thing, is the Seawolves, I believe, hosting Burr and Burton, the newcomer to D1, the traditional D2 powerhouse now up a division. Seeing what they can do against the D1 team, you know, co-op team in year two of this experiment. I can't wait for that game.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that. That's kind of my first thing I'm looking at in week one. Just the fact that it's 6 days away now.
Yeah. And it's funny with the Seawolves. They're a co-op and they're divisive.
Yeah.
I still hear people say, how can they be, you know, the two schools of that size, how can they be one team? That doesn't seem fair. Last year, I mean, if they ever win as a co-op, like if they win it all as a co-op, it's going to be an unpopular champion, to say the least, just because when they're playing against, like, I mean, the combined school population of South Burlington and Burlington High School is upwards of 2,000. I want to say it's probably around 1,800, which would make them by far the largest school population in the state, beyond CVU and Essex, which are both in that 1,300 range. I mean, this week they're playing Burn Burton. Burn Burton is 700-something kids. They interesting story with them. The new coach, Tom McCoy, is the father of their starting QB, Joey McCoy, who had a tremendous debut season as the quarterback last year. He's really fun to watch as a dual threat, accurate passer, athletic, three-sport kid. I'm curious. I mean, they've been a spread team for the better part of a decade under the former coach, Jason Thomas, who really built that program into something special. And you're right. It's going to be fascinating to see if they can, how they fare, and two, you know, like, can they sustain what they built?
And Joey McCoy might be the best QB in the state this season.
He's got a case that conversation. Probably the easy statement is the best returning passer.
Yes, absolutely. Especially with Jake Cady now gone at St. Jay, which we haven't even discussed.
Another father-son combo between the signal caller and the play caller there with Rich Alercio's son, Trey, the heir apparent to Jake Cady. They seemingly develop these great athletes, or I think Alex Abrami spotlighted a transfer, a big kid at tight end for the Hilltoppers named, where was it here? David Hutchison, 6'3", 265-pound tight end.
Wow.
That's a big target.
That's a big boy.
That's a big target. So, they have a kid named Hunter Palmieri coming back. He caught, it was a great, great receiver last year, 1,300 yards.
Remember him.
In the air, alongside Ren Smith on the other side. I wouldn't expect St. Jay to drop off much. They've also, like Burn Burton, built this great program, college-style program, spread offense, you know, really, really a lot of momentum there in the kingdom for them.
Where will you be week one?
That is up in the air.
Okay. We're a little ways out still.
Well, I think
us sports guys tend to do things a little bit close to the vest.
Yeah, no.
Thursday night, we'll be talking.
It's going to be some blanket coverage there Friday night. I think Alex is going to be at the Seawolves game. I think I'm going to go to Milton for Milton Colchester.
Okay.
I believe that game's in Milton. I will shore up that detail before I go to Milton if the game is instead at Colchester. That would be embarrassing for everybody.
If you go to Milton and there's nobody there.
Yeah, that would be
a soccer game.
Maybe earlier in the day.
Maybe.
The other one we were toying with was Middlebury Fairhaven, but yeah. Week two, you have Middlebury against the Seawolves up in Chittenden County. So that might be the better avenue to catch the Tigers early in the season. The funny thing folks might not know about covering high school football is we have to do all the stats.
You guys do. You always have a notepad on the sideline.
So we're cataloging every play. So of all the sports to cover, it might be the heaviest lift because of the timing, the elements, the workload. Like there's no high school program that can churn out stats, accurate stats, you know, attempts, totals, yards, averages, you know, all that stuff in the time frame we need to publish a story. So everything you see in the free press or other outlets around the state is basically the media taking notes and processing that ASAP. So that's all. Week one is always like, wait, how do we do this again?
Yeah. Get back into the swing of things.
I mean, do you run into that with the camera? Like, wait, how do we shoot football again?
Yeah, it's funny. Even shooting soccer last night at UVM, you kind of do. Every season is a little different. You know, it's funny. I think the biggest one is definitely hockey for me. I struggle to get back into the swing of things with hockey because you kind of have to anticipate where the puck is going to go just because it's such a fast moving sport. So it's hard to do that. But with football, the one thing that people always ask me is you have to carry that thing. Big camera the whole time, up and down the sideline, I do. Football is the one where you have to keep moving because you have to be ahead of the play, let the play come toward you.
Right.
You have to be in front of things.
Yes.
So if you see me at a football game or anybody at a football game, we're charging. You and Abrami do move, but
oh yeah,
you can see me jogging behind all the players on the sideline trying to get ahead of the play, especially if there's like a turnover. I work up a sweat. I don't work out that day because I get my workout from work.
So what's your TV camera weigh?
I think between 50 and 60 pounds.
Really?
Yeah, 40 and 60 probably. Somewhere in that range. I actually was getting a suit tailored the other day, and the guy who was...
Humble brag, no NBD.
No, I was just getting... I got to do the things I got to do, yeah. Right? The tailor was actually like trying to figure out what was going on with my shoulders. He goes, this shoulder is a lot bigger than your other one. And I go, is it really? He's like, yeah, your right shoulder's bigger. I was like, that's where I hold the camera. So, you know, we're always moving around with this big old thing. Technology has changed a lot of things. It's made phones smaller. It's made computers thinner. It has not made cameras thinner and smaller, unfortunately.
And apparently right shoulders of suits worn by cameramen aren't smaller either.
Humble brag, right?
Yeah. No, it's, well, I mean, what color was the suit? What can folks look forward to on the newscast?
It was a nice bright blue suit. Ooh. That I got recently in July. Ooh. So I've been dusting the cobwebs off of it. I guess there weren't cobwebs, but it was getting tailored for a while and I've liked to break it out.
I'm going to keep going in this line of questions.
Let's do it.
How many suits in Jack Cordy's wardrobe?
I have three now.
Three? Only three?
Just three.
I would have thought it was more.
Yeah.
Do you have a lot of suit jackets?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, you wear those to weddings and such and mix and match. But on air, three full suits, a little different colors, navy, bright blue, and then a charcoal gray because you're not supposed to wear black.
Right. That's true.
Not supposed to wear black unless you're at a funeral or something.
Or a politician. Yeah.
So those are the three colors. If you have any other questions about my wardrobe, you can address them to @JackMyNBC5 on Twitter.
Okay. That's the direction. When we come back on 101.3 The Game, we're going to have UVM men's soccer coach Rob Dow. We're going to catch up with him about the Catamounts for the 2019 season. So don't go anywhere.
Phone lines are now open. Call 802-655-6672. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
All right, we're back on Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game. We've been talking some football, talking some soccer. We're about to talk some more soccer with UVM men's soccer coach Rob Dow. But I believe, if I'm not mistaken, there's also some really good EPL soccer on today. 12:30, we got Liverpool-Arsenal. Liverpool, the reigning Champions League champs. Arsenal having a couple, I'm gonna call them unsatisfying seasons lately.
Mm-hmm. My best friend is an Arsenal fan, and he's never happy. So I know that that's how I keep track of how the team is doing.
And it's funny, what made me think of that was I just got a text from a good buddy of mine holding up his dachshund wrapped in an Arsenal scarf saying, "It's game day."
Oh, boy.
And on the line now, UVM men's soccer coach Rob Dow. Rob, before we get into your team, I'm curious who you got today with Liverpool and Arsenal.
Morning. Liverpool.
Okay. You a big Liverpool guy, or just in that game that's who you like?
No, I should hate Liverpool because I'm a United fan. But
why on earth are you a United fan?
I'm watching them right now, and they're struggling. They're down 1-0 to Crystal Palace. They got some pressure on them. Liverpool, I could admire what Klopp's doing, and their team is just in form. So I'm going with them.
I was thinking about this yesterday after we spoke up at Virtue Field in the afternoon. How much soccer do you and your staff consume outside of just your team?
Hopefully my wife isn't listening to this. It's, I would say, you know, certainly my son's taken up some of that time since he's been born 2.5 years ago, but the majority of the day, no doubt about that.
Okay.
The game.
Okay.
I was trying to watch some Premier League with my son this morning, but let my wife sleep in a little bit, but it didn't go so well. He was screaming, wanted to watch his own, I think, Paw Patrol.
Okay.
So, I lost that battle.
So do you guys have some rivalries in the team? What's the big rivalry? Is there a certain player that has a rivalry with a certain other player's team?
Well, we've got a lot of City fans on our team.
That's unfortunate.
And they're bandwagoners, but yeah. So the majority of our guys are supporting them, but you know, again, like as a coach, it's great to admire Pep. But what I think is like honoring tradition and you know, proper big clubs with some foundation to it. You know, we always have good battles between United, City. Obviously, there's a bunch of guys who support in Liverpool based on current form, and there's always a lot of banter post-training about who's going to win on the weekend, who lost, stuff like that. But I would say City's taking up the majority of our group.
I'm sure you could have heard some of that banter last weekend when you guys took a trip down to Manchester for a little preseason exhibition swing. Can you kind of describe what do you want the team to get out of those weekends away? You said yesterday when we were, you know, chatting at Virtue Field, you bought food for the team and made them cook for each other. Well, tell us what's going on down there in Manchester.
Yeah, I think like the tradition started several years ago about, I think we used to go to Stowe. You know, we've been to Lake Placid, I've been to, you know, a few different spots, but a guy named John O'Keefe down in Manchester, Vermont, has invited us down for the, you know, like spring games, preseason games, you know, and we went down there for a spring game and just saw the setup, you know, the environment being, you know, around the mountains and kind of escape from the real world. It's just a great place to unplug and, for us to just focus on, you know, UVM men's soccer. And so we've got, like, I think our team's kind of blessed to have some older guys who, you know, have been living on their own for a while. And I think our best cook is Jon Bartel.
really?
Yeah, yeah. And I know his first, I was able to go to his house in Iceland, and he cooked me a meal. Like, he took it on himself, and it was amazing. Cooked us lamb, I believe. And, you know, he immediately, well, I put him in front of the whole team. You're like, this guy can cook, so he's going to be responsible for for the meals. But he created a little bit of a support cast around him. And so anyway, the guys get, like, a massive, you know, kind of stockpile of Costco food, and they cook each other breakfast. We'll take them out for lunch, but at nighttime they get the grill, and, you know, their burgers, steaks, hot dogs, that type of thing. You know, it just brings a little bit closer as a family, and gets them all at one table, and without us, you know, without the coaching staff, to be honest, it's really driven by them. You know, and I think that breaks down some barriers, you know, between some of our older guys who are 24 years old, who can sometimes seem a little bit, I would say, intimidating, just based on age and seniority. And then, you know, our 17, 18-year-olds, you know, coming in and seeing that these guys are real people and really care about the program. And that's what it's all about.
And you mentioned Jon being not only your top returning scorer, co-captain, and the resident best cook, but he's from Iceland, and one of several guys from Iceland on your team, one of many from, you know, far-flung places, different backgrounds. How important is that for you guys, you know, to have these moments where you guys can sort of cross boundaries and connect in different ways when you have guys from, you know, Iceland, Germany, you know, Canada, different parts of the States, elsewhere? What is that? How crucial is that?
I think it's, you know, it's one of my missions in terms of, like, assembling a team, you know, to have that diversity of background, you know, where guys can come, you know, to Burlington, Vermont, you know, of all places, and, you know, to kind of feel like they can be themselves, but also respect, you know, other people's traditions and values and customs, you know. So, you know, in reality, you can look at it two ways. You can say it's a big risk because there are so many differences, but, you know, we just try to create, you know, a transparent and honest environment where people can feel like themselves. And, you know, and our mission here, and I think it's been a UVM soccer's mission for a really long time, is to create, you know, a family amongst the team. Just because, like, you know, moving to Burlington, you know, the majority of our players are leaving and going far away from home, and they may not be able to escape, you know, back on a weekend to, you know, visit family just based on distance. So it's critical, you know, for our guys to lean on each other, you know, when things go wrong and, you know, and life happens, you know, for, you know, like, honestly, like, our Icelanders have a meal, I believe, every Sunday night, and, you know, invite certain guys down to make them feel like they're, you know, back at their own houses and on dining room tables. So that's really awesome for me to hear, and for the guys to take it, the ownership on themselves to, you know, create a real team atmosphere. So it's extremely important to me, but I think it's extremely important to our guys, you know. And so I don't think I'm the one to credit. I think it's mostly we have good people in the program who, you know, just want to kind of give back and, you know, and learn about some other guys and what's important to them.
And so we're, what is it? I'm doing the math here. We're like 9 months since the end of the last season, which was your second season in charge, your second season with double-digit wins, fourth season in a row with double-digit wins, which has only happened one other time in program history. And I think that's a fact that I think a lot of folks that might not, they might be casual fans or casual UVM fans, might not have realized, because it's sort of sneaky like that. But I mean, we're arguably looking at one of the two, you know, premier eras of UVM men's soccer. And What can folks expect to see out of you guys as you look to sustain that this fall?
I think I said this yesterday. It's a lot of pressure, but I didn't know that. You know, but as you mentioned the facts there, you know, I think that's about right. And I think we've got a really mature group that's, really looking to prove themselves in big games. You know, if you look at us last season, I thought that was our shortfall. It was, you know, going to UConn and being up two times in the game on the road in a midweek, but we just couldn't quite get it done. You know, so I wouldn't, you know, you're mentioning some stats there about number of games won. I think our guys are just focused on day by day trying to figure out what it takes to win a championship. You know, in those, you know, in an America East championship game or hosting Colgate at home, who is in the top, like, I think 25 in RPI. So how do we, you know, as a team collectively, how do we, you know, take care of the little things and the details so that in, you know, 90th minute or just before half, you know, we're scoring a goal or we're locking it down to secure the win, you know, and those details are, you know, the small things we have been working on in training camp and what we have learned from previous years. You know, and I look at, you know, this senior class and, you know, the experience they've had as freshmen, you know, going down and going to overtime against Virginia in the tournament to a regular season title, and then feeling like they underachieved, but coming back this year, a big thing they've been focused on is how do they send their message to the group about why we were successful or why we didn't achieve our goals, and making sure they're showing up every day, and focus on, you know, discipline, working as hard as they can, and supporting each other through that process.
And that day by day process for you guys starts in earnest there next week when you guys go to Chicago, games at Loyola, game at DePaul, and then you guys are off and running. And what are you looking for to come back from Chicago at the end of next weekend?
Well, it's another trip away. It's another opportunity for us to learn how to be successful on the road. You know, so these out of conference games are establishing a foundation for how to go to, you know, how to go to Albany, how to go to Stony Brook, you know, and on these trips, you know, when you're not sleeping in your own bed and eating the food that you regularly would, and you know, be successful. So it's certainly another opportunity for us to learn and get stronger, but we're looking for two wins, you know, and I, not to put pressure on the team, but when we get out of region and these trips are important for us to show that, you know, we can compete, you know, against a Loyola who's a top team and, you know, beat a Big East team, on the road is, you know, that's important for us, but it's important because I think we'll, you know, and however we perform well. There's a lot of confidence there that we can build on. But no matter what, I think we'll be better from the trip. And that's because our guys are just in the right frame of mind of, you know, taking game by game or road trip by road trip and, you know, taking the little things and developing and learning from that process.
Now, Austin asks about the X's and O's. I ask the important questions as someone from Chicago. I see you have an off day on Saturday next weekend. Have you been to Chicago? Do you need recommendations? What's going on here in the Windy City for you guys?
I went to Chicago for the first time this past January. It was extremely cold when we were there. I think the coaches' convention was at that time. But yeah, I need some recommendations. Where should we go? I wouldn't say that's my strength. I think my coaching staff do a better job of, you know, adding some balance in our trips. You know, myself and, you know, probably Adrian's heads are buried in film to
to prepare for DePaul on the next day, because we'll get one of the tough things here. I'm not going to get out of X's and O's yet, but one of the tough things is that nobody really gets each other's film until after the first game. So we'll find out more about DePaul on Friday night when they play. I think it's Northern Illinois, and then we'll have to study and come up with a pretty quick game plan. So anyway, as you can tell, I need some suggestions.
So Saturday's not a day to walk down the Magnificent Mile and pick up some deep dish, or what's the deal there?
Yeah. Magnificent Mile, is that what you said?
Oh, yeah, so that's Michigan Avenue. They call that the Magnificent. Here we go. We call that the Magnificent Mile in Chicago. A little Giordano's deep dish pizza capped off by an Italian beef or a Chicago-style hot dog at Portillo's. Okay, that's where you got to go. Those are the Chicago staples there. If you get a chance between studying game film on Saturday.
We'll make sure we get a break to do that.
Awesome.
And we'll be there. What's pretty cool is we're going to be there on Wednesday night with a full day to prepare on Thursday. So I'm sure we'll get that in.
Sweet. Well, thanks for joining us, Rob. Good luck next week. If you need more recommendations, you know how to find Jack. He's the guy with the local knowledge. So I'll let you guys take it from there.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Thanks, Rob.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Rob Dow, UVM Men's Soccer. They have a tall task replacing their top two scorers, Gio Alves and Justin Freitas.
Mm-hmm.
They brought in some new guys. They got a couple guys back, among them Yon Bardal, guy he mentioned yesterday, local guy Evan Rulo. Thing about UVM Men's Soccer, historically, they're one of the few programs at UVM that has a lot of local guys contributing. So I think that's why they've been able to maintain a really good following in recent years. But they get going next week. When we come back on Sports Saturday, it'll be time for Hot or Not. Don't go anywhere.
You better crank up that AC because Sports Saturday is about to bring the heat. It's Hot or Not on 101.3 The Game.
All right. Before we get into Hot or Not, Sports Saturday is sponsored by Vermont Engine Services. Located at 16 Krupp Drive in Williston, 802-863-2326. Vermont Engine, there you can find them online at vermontengine.com or on Facebook. They're open 7:30 to 5, Monday to Friday, Saturdays 8 to noon. They're an engine machine shop, say that five times fast. They're into engine rebuilding, boring and honing of cylinders, crankshaft grinding, head rebuilding, engine balancing, turn brake drum and rotors, flywheel resurfacing. They sell mowers. They got Dixie choppers, grasshoppers, zero-turn mowers. Great deals over there at Vermont Engine Services. You can find them at 16 Krupp Drive in Williston. And Aaron, Hot or Not, what do you got?
All right, here we go. Hot or Not is brought to you by Superb Cupcakes in the Taft Corner Shopping Center in Williston. Stop there for the best cupcakes around. They will not disappoint, offering over 100 varieties of regular and mini cupcakes made from scratch daily. There's no box mix at Superb. All right, here we go, getting into it. Patrick Chung has further tarnished the Patriots' reputation. This comes from Stephen A. Smith.
I'm not listening to anything Stephen A. Smith says, so I'm just going to say not, because he's an individual on a team of, 50-plus guys, an organization with hundreds of employees. He's hardly the most infamous guy on the team, and they do enough winning to make up for a lot of this stuff. So his transgression isn't like... That's not a black mark on the Kraft family, so no. Come on. Stephen A., come on.
First off, put some respect on the GOAT's name, okay? Stephen A.
You're not a Stephen A. guy, are you?
Nah, I just think he's hilarious. It's an act, a little bit. But as for the question at hand, no, the answer is not, definitely, because winning cures all. If this is happening on the Buffalo Bills, it's a different story. But when it comes to Patrick Chung... Obviously not a great story, indicted on cocaine possession in New Hampshire, so not too far from here. But yeah, it's not going to derail anything, The Patriots are so good at just moving past incidents like this and not letting the incidents affect them that they'll be fine. They'll win 12 games and that's how it works.
I saw something on Facebook, a friend of a friend who's quite funny. Was Chung injured too?
Broken arm. He's just coming off it.
So the spin my friend's friend, actually, he was on Brady and the Bunch podcast this week, Bob Futon, as he's known. Belichick is playing chess when everybody's playing checkers. Chung was on the mend. This just lets Belichick take another DB on the roster to start the season. So building depth, it's great.
It doesn't tarnish the Patriots' reputation, and I think that's obvious, because when players have these drug issues, the finger's pretty much never pointed at the team. Typically, it's pointed directly at the player, because as we all know, these are grown men, and what they do off the field is largely their own business, and if it's not hurting somebody else, then the team's reaction to it rarely gets criticized.
Right.
So, no, I think it's a silly take.
Okay.
The Red Sox will never attempt a rebuild. This one's from Alex Speer.
I buy that. I buy that because I forget how I used this phrase yesterday, but they have so much sunken cost in that lineup. I don't think you can ever truly rebuild. And they have such a financial reservoir that they're never going to have to. They can always splash cash for two or three guys and they'll make another couple, two or three, you know, savvy free agent purchases. You just hope they can reinvest in that farm system, get that thing back cranking like it was, which helped lead to, you know, this great run of success in the end of the aughts and start of the 2010s.
The Red Sox never rebuild. They just restock. That's the way that they go about things. They have the capital to do that, and they do so. They go out and get Dombrowski to win a championship. He sticks around. That's just what they do. So no, you'll never see them in a position like the Baltimore Orioles are in, where it's been years of downtrodden, you know, years without success. The Red Sox will always be near the top or trying to get to the top, and that's just how they roll.
Yes, Alex Speer's argument was the same thing, that even before Dombrowski, the Red Sox, generally speaking, were buyers, not builders.
Yeah.
So it's not in their MO, and that probably won't change, even with the success that we've seen from teams focusing on their farm system recently. The Sox have the money to do it whichever way they want.
Right, exactly, exactly.
All right. Avoiding Tommy John is not a good thing for Chris Sale. This from Tim Kirchen.
I'm not a doctor.
Do you want to hear his explanation?
Yes, please.
Well, this is very discouraging in the pitching vernacular these days. We all know this cliche now. The two worst words in the pitching vernacular are Dr. Andrews. And if you go see him, it's usually really bad news. And I unfortunately think this is going to end up as Tommy John surgery. And you're right. This is such bad news for the Red Sox, not just for making the playoffs this year, which was fate to begin with. But next year now, they lose their best pitcher potentially for an entire season. And a good lesson here, Buster. Last, there's no telling when this is going to happen or where this is going to happen. But when it does, we've all learned you better get this taken care of if you're going to be the pitcher you want to be long term.
So basically, it's going to happen eventually, and he's just putting it off, and that just means more time without Chris Sale.
Yeah, then I guess I'm on board with that being, you know, that's... It's bad that he's avoiding it. Like, it's ultimately it's become such a integral part of baseball and baseball medicine because it helps pitchers come back stronger. You get this ligament you've spent your entire life wrecking, and it's reborn. And it stinks that it's, you know, a year plus recovery process. But for a guy like Chris Sale, the timing at his age is tough. But it could rejuvenate him and give him an extra, you know, 3 to 5 years on the back end of his career that otherwise might have been ending at this rate very soon.
Since we're playing hot or not, I will say hot because, I mean, that all these baseball players, you almost want them, as Tim just said, to get this injury out of the way early. Local connection would be AJ Puck, who was the Oakland A's first round pick in 2016, pitched for the Vermont Lake Monsters. He had Tommy John surgery last year and is now the 107th or 108th Lake Monster called up to the major leagues. So it's almost just like, get it out of the way, rebuild that arm, as you say, kind of rebirth it, and just go back to playing baseball. Because it's going to happen almost assuredly. There's a high chance. We see this so many times where you're going to have the surgery. So just get it out of the way. get your arm in shape and then go back to playing baseball. It's tougher for a guy like Chris Sale. So it's almost just like, get it out of the way, man.
But it makes a lot of sense for him right now that it's a throwaway year at this point, and then you spend as much of your recovery in the throwaway year and then in the offseason as possible. So why not do it now? Maybe he thinks he can avoid it long term, but most of the time when pitchers think that, they're wrong.
It's already been a throwaway year. He probably should have done it a month or two ago.
He's got such a funky throwing motion too. It's almost a sure thing with guys who throw like he does.
We were talking about this last week, like just the overhand throwing motion and the torque. Was it you, Aaron, saying like
the direct overhand stretch that most pitchers use is like the equivalent of 60 pounds hanging from your arm when you throw 100 miles an hour.
That blank too.
Yeah.
So I remember. Listen.
It's not good for your arm, and 3/4 is not much better, I think, in terms of the mechanics of it.
Right.
You'll really want to be throwing submarine if you are capable of it. But it's a matter of time. I think it just got to be dealt with. Moving on. The Red Sox should pay Mookie regardless of how much it's going to cost them.
Jack, you take this one.
I don't know. That's a good question. Threw it on me right away. I needed like 6 seconds to think about it. Every guy has a price tag that's too much. And I think that that's the case with Mookie as well, especially if you're going to commit to potentially having a down year next year. You know, we've been talking rebuild this whole show. So if you're not planning on competing next year, then don't spend the cash now and wait to spend it when the window is back open a little bit more. So I would say don't extend him if the price tag is too steep. And it seems like for a guy like Mookie, an MVP type, that it will be.
I think you got to spend the money. I think he's your guy. He's been your guy. He came up with you guys. There are only so many guys of that MVP caliber around. And once you got one, you need to keep them. And like I was saying earlier in the show, like, money isn't the issue for the Red Sox. Like, if John Henry wants Mookie Betts, like, just pay Mookie Betts. Like, John Henry will remain rich even if he overpays for Mookie Betts. So it's whether it's sound business, I don't know. But yeah, I keep him. Come on.
For me, if his contract that he wants is anywhere in the realm of JD's or below, I'm okay with it. If he's thinking something like Mike Trout or Bryce Harper, not a chance. We'll have to see. He has an arbitration year this year, so
right,
it'll get figured out.
Yeah, and I think ultimately, like, you can't let him go for nothing.
Yeah.
That's that would be the cardinal sin.
Yep.
So however that works out, you can't let a guy like that go for nothing.
Yeah, it's really more of once he gets through arbitration, do you keep that contract that you've just signed or do you trade it away?
Right, right.
That's hot or not.
Ooh, okay.
Spicy.
How old is this Nelly jam?
It's been a while.
90s?
Is it 90s?
Late 90s, like early 2000s, I think.
Because I feel like,
I'm going to find out and we'll let you know in the last segment.
Okay, all right. What do we got, Jack?
No, it's a good tease.
Okay.
I was just going to say I have the answer, but I mean, you got to wait for it.
Yeah, well, okay.
Stick around.
Yeah, we're running out of time here on Sports Saturday, but don't go anywhere. We got a couple minutes left. We'll be back after this.
I hate to say it, but the show is almost over. But before we go, we'll get the Brass Monkeys bumping and get you ready for your sports weekend. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game. Okay, so to answer the question from before the break, Nelly released Hot in Here in 2002.
And we got a little taste of it right there.
Little taste.
A little bit.
Just intentional or unintentional comedy division. I don't know. I'm not gonna say.
I'm gonna pretend that was on purpose.
definitely okay. Purposeful.
Whatever you say. It's Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game. We're cruising into what's hopefully a soft landing in about 2.5 minutes. Jack,
yeah.
How would you rate today's show?
It was an A. Not quite. We don't get the plus, but it was an A.
A still gets you the 4.0.
That's true. And I did not achieve that in high school. I didn't have a 4.0 GPA.
It's okay.
Did you?
It's not for everybody.
Were you a 4.0?
Yeah.
I'm allowing you to brag right now. You had a 4.0.
Yeah,
okay.
I was. Yeah.
All right. Well, everybody, Mr. Austin Danforth is a smart guy.
I have my moments.
Read his work.
I have my moments. We'd love to thank the UVM soccer coaches, Christy Huizinga, the women's team, and Rob Dow, the men's team, for joining us. Great win for Christy's Cats last night. Rob's team gets underway next week with the trip to Chicago to face Loyola and DePaul. And I want to say both teams, I mean, they've become as bankably competitive teams this side of men's basketball as UVM has, which is really cool. And I think Vermont is underrated as a soccer state, too.
I agree. Coming from out of state, I completely agree.
We routinely produce college soccer players at a reasonably high level from Vermont. So I think it's a pretty as sports go here, the sneaky sports, you got soccer, you got golf. Everybody knows skiing. Baseball is a good one.
Hockey.
So hockey a little bit.
That's not sneaky.
But like high level guys, you don't get that many in hockey.
It's true.
Aaron, what do you got for the poll question? You have the poll question up?
Are you efforting? I do. Hold on one moment. It's right here. Should the Red Sox attempt a full rebuild? 62% say nope.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what I thought.
Jack, where are you going to be tonight?
Tonight, I am going to be at the UVM men's soccer exhibition game against Southern New Hampshire. So I hear there's a pep rally at 6:30 at Virtue Field, and then they take on Southern New Hampshire at 7. So I'm going to be there, grab some highlights, and get a little taste of the Catamounts this year.
Cool. I'll be at Centennial Field for the handout of the Tom Racine MVP Award. That's coming up tonight. But this is Sports Saturday. For Jack Cordy, I'm Austin Danforth. Have a great weekend.